Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all. We're privileged to be able to start most weeks with one of our regulars. His name is Bill Walton. He is the host of The Bill Walton Show, a former maven of Wall Street as Allied Capital Corporation's CEO, and also the president of a terrific organization, the Council for National Policy, of which I'm proud to be a member. Bill is a man of many parts, and we're delighted always to be able to explore his thinking on a host of subjects that bear on protecting the country we love. Bill Walton, welcome back to Securing America, sir. Good to have you, sir, as always.
Frank, talking with you.
Thank you. I wanted to start with one of our favorite topics, China, and something that has been developing now for quite some time, Bill, that is obviously ominous for the people of China, but arguably for the rest of us as well. We'll talk about sort of the broader capability that the Chinese are building out in a moment, but let's just start with this stunning report about the numbers and capabilities of the surveillance cameras that China has already put into place and is evidently going to continue putting into place in the days and years ahead. What does this say about China's, the Chinese Communist Party specifically, attitude towards its own people and its intentions?
Well, we're talking about a report that was put out by a group called CompareTech that does exhaustive research into technologies around the world. And they've determined there are roughly a billion surveillance cameras in the world. It's hard to get it precisely nailed down, but that's roughly the number. And almost half of the world's surveillance cameras are in China, which puts that number at about a half billion. And compare that to their population, which is about 1.3 billion, and you've got roughly one surveillance camera for every two Chinese. And it's densely populated. That's spread out over the entire country, which is enormous. But if you look at the density of the cameras in the major cities like Wuhan or Shanghai or wherever you would see a lot of people that might be in opposition to the Chinese Communist Party, it's probably the number of cameras per person is probably closer to 1 to 1. And by comparison, I think the next number of surveillance cameras per person in the world is India, which has roughly 1 in 10. And then you get all the way down to the bottom of the list. Tokyo has 1 per 1,000 people. So China's all in on surveillance. What's the agenda? Well, the agenda is obviously to create a digital totalitarian state. And we talked last week or week before about the fact that China's Communist Party has kept its population under control through delivering economic growth. And now with the residential real estate market faltering or collapsing is a better word, and the country becoming increasingly debt laden, their ability to spin the economic plates has grown more and more limited. So they're going straight to digital surveillance. And, we can talk about the capabilities of these cameras. They're terrifying.
Well, I think it's sufficient for the purpose to say there's a lot of them and they're capable of intensive, intrusive surveillance of individuals.
The point I want to make is it's not just the cameras per se. I mean, you can't monitor a half a billion cameras unless you have a robust artificial intelligence system, and they do, and it's growing. And the quality of these cameras is extraordinary. Their ability to see things is 4 times greater than the human eye. And they're panoramic cameras that can scan an entire stadium and get facial recognition data on every single person there.
And that's the point I wanted to get to, Bill, is it's not just the cameras. This, as you say, it's being integrated into a comprehensive, well, digital gulag is the way I think of it. The algorithms, the artificial intelligence, the quantum computing, in addition to facial recognition, gait recognition, all of this is being compiled in real time into the ultimate big data system and monitored and accessed for the purposes of well, not just surveilling, but controlling.
Well, one of the things about an artificial intelligence system, it's only as good as the amount of data as you can gather, so it can analyze more and more and more. And they're piling all these photos into and all these images into one big artificial intelligence system. They have some software they call One Person, One File, which essentially can take all the data collected about you anywhere at any time, puts it into one file. And the thing about the AI system they have, it can learn and it can begin to predict behavior. They can take where you've been and develop a pattern of where you might go next.
Right. Bill, this is all being integrated.
Just as an aside to people, if you're thinking of sending your DNA information into one of these DNA companies, I'd give it a second thought, because most of that ends up with the Chinese.
It does indeed, along with a lot of other data, notably TikTok users and the like. But Bill, this social credit system, as the Chinese call it, is a kind of a fantastic Orwellian project in which all of that big data and all of the inputs into it are capable of being mined in real time. As I understand it, you know, they can tell you basically where anybody in China is within minutes. Well, this of a request to do so. And as you say, it's about monitoring not just their whereabouts or their expression or whatever. It is about knowing the details of their lives, who they interact with, where they work, what their bank account is, you know, their social communications and the like. And all of this is fed into this the maw of this system for controlling them.
Well, Frank, as you and I, we've talked about, we laugh. I mean, doing this show with you has led me into learning about a lot of things I've found very disturbing. And I hate to become a conspiracy theorist, but we got to look at the links between China and what China's doing with its social credit system and the aspirations of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, and the Global Reset. And, you know, they're very interested in using the banking system to shape behavior. And the three major credit card companies, and I think also including Bank of America, recently put an ID chip, or maybe not literal chip, but some code inside their credit card, so that if you go to a gun shop or a gun show in America, that information is being fed into their systems. And the goal is to eliminate the sale of firearms in America, completely circumventing the legislative process and the will of most American people.
Wow. Bill, again, this is the point, really, and you're right, we do get into some pretty grim topics, but we have a need to know, and that's really the purpose of this show, is to try to make sure people do understand how this stuff is evolving and the intersection between the globalists of various stripes and the globalist communists, really, is chilling, to the extent especially that this does begin to migrate from China into all kinds of other places. And Bill, we've talked about this on this program and our Committee on the Present Danger China webinars, Stop Vaccine Passport webinars, the extent to which the use of this COVID pandemic and the information that is associated with monitoring people's vaccination status really not only lends itself to a social credit system, but is utilizing technology associated with it, ID cards and the like. No, we're going to have to pause for just a second. Let me ask you to hold the thought, because we're going to come back to this and some other things that the Chinese are up to and more with Bill Walton on the other side of a very short break. But I do want to just put the marker down. This is not just a problem in China by any means. This is a problem coming to a theater near you. Well, not just a theater, not just a gun store, but to perhaps your home as well. That's more with Bill Walton right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The late, great New York Times columnist and pundit William Safire once observed correctly that Hillary Clinton is a congenital liar. Turns out, Joe Biden is similarly afflicted. A notorious plagiarist, Biden has been reflexively untruthful about virtually everything, including his determination to unite America, the state of our economy, MAGA Republicans being enemies of the state, and his insistence that the Chinese communists are not bad folks. While Joe Biden and his friends frequently accuse others of engaging in the big lie, the practice of dissembling so colossally and repeatedly that people believe it, his own serial dissembling qualifies him as the big liar. The latest example came on Sunday's 60 Minutes, during which President Biden declared, quote, "There's not a single thing that I've observed at all that would affect me or the United States relative to my son Hunter," unquote. Honestly? This is Rick Gaffney.
We're back, and Bill Walton is in the house virtually. He's making his regular appearance here, I'm pleased to say, at Securing America. Bill is the host of his own television podcast. It's called The Bill Walton Show, and it's a terrific resource. He was complaining bitterly about all the terrible things that we wind up talking about here. He does a fair amount of it on his own show, and I commend it to all of you as well. I'd like to think it's a cross-pollination. But
it is.
Bill,
yeah.
Listen, the thing that I think most of us are not adequately appreciative of is what starts in China doesn't necessarily stay there. And you're so right to be pointing out, the connections to a lot of other people who have a shared agenda. They may not have a shared end state, but they have a shared agenda, which is really taking down our free society, our constitutional republic, in favor of it being just another cog in the international community wheel. And I guess I wanted to ask you, to the extent that that's all going on, do we have an alternative? Do we have a choice in whether we allow this digital gulag to be insinuated here and enslaving us as well?
Well, I think the first thing we need to be doing is just exactly what you and I are doing, is identifying what's going on and shouting to the high heavens about the potential for abuse. I mean, this is something which is happening in real time. There was a group that was headed by a former governor of Kansas, whose name escapes me at the moment, a religious liberty group that was promoting candidates who support Christianity and religious speech in the United States.
Probably Sam Brownback, I would guess.
That's possible. It. Thank you. Yeah. And they got a letter from Chase last week that said, "We're closing your account. No explanation, nothing. We've reviewed your account. It's closed." You know, that happened to my pillow guy, about 2 months ago. And so he's becoming unbanked. And so what's happening is the financial institutions in America and around the world are beginning to help implement the ESG, the DEI agenda. And, you know, what we can do about it is to begin to sort of put them on notice. We've already sent some letters to our friend Larry Fink at BlackRock, who's promoting this, but I think also Jamie Dimon and at J.P. Morgan, and also Brian Moynihan at Bank of America is all in on this. Brian's talked about the need for the banking system worldwide to cough up $150 trillion to bring about its anti-fossil fuel green climate agenda. And, stay tuned. He's got an interesting ally who just happened to become King of England. King Charles, Brian was praising him on CNBC recently, saying, "This guy is terrific. He's really all in on the climate thing, and he can bring everybody together, and he's going to really help us advance the green anti-fossil fuel agenda." So we may go from a monarch in England who was appropriately, not on the radar screen, to very one to one who's very much going to have an agenda going forward. And that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. He's been stridently in that mode as Prince of Wales, and it's undoubtedly his agenda going forward as king. Let me ask you about another, power center, shall we say. The Securities and Exchange Commission bill is also now getting into this ESG, the environment, social governance agenda of Larry Fink and others on the hard left. Green New Deal is one of its manifestations, but it's a very far-reaching war on fossil fuels and effort to, well, Barack Obama likes to say, fundamentally transform America. What is the SEC doing in this regard, Bill, and what are the implications of it?
Well, we've talked at length in the past about ESG, which is environmental social governance, which is basically the woke agenda brought to corporations. And their Wall Street, being ever alert to a fad, began seeing people, sort of like that ESG, sounded good. And so they slapped an ESG label on almost 600 or 650 mutual funds in the last 5 to 10 years. And the SEC has begun to look into this. And lo and behold, it turns out that these so-called ESG portfolios are not very much, very different from an index fund. The only difference is you pay a lot more in fees for an ESG fund than you do for a straight index fund. But it's not that I don't think the SEC is trying to protect investors from mislabeling these funds. I think their deeper agenda is they are pushing the climate change agenda through their regulations and disclosures requests or requirements with all public companies. And what they want to do with these mutual funds is they want to get them more serious about making sure these companies are towing the line with their climate agenda. So it may look like an investigation to protect investors, but that's not the agenda. The agenda is to get these companies and these mutual fund managers to push it even harder.
That's my concern. And I think, you know, when you see what BlackRock has been doing all by itself to bully these companies into the ESG agenda, And the quote that you gave us a moment ago from the Bank of America, the stagger. I mean, I didn't know there's $150 trillion in the world, let alone that could be all applied to this effort to, again, destroy the most important part of our energy security. And, you know, we're talking about blackouts in Puerto Rico at the moment. We're talking about the ongoing dangers of rolling blackouts, brownouts at least, in California and other parts of the West. We've had the experience last year of terrible blackouts in Texas. The idea that we're going to become even more reliant on unreliable so-called renewables instead of reliable baseload power is just a nightmare, especially if you're talking about having everybody plug in their cars, you know. So there's a serious disconnect here, Bill, and I fear that where this leads us, as our friend Tucker Carlson has been talking about, is really to the destruction of Western civilization. So you talk about gloom and doom. How's that for a prognosis if we don't get off this craziness?
Well, we're not going to let it happen, Frank.
Good. All right. That's the spirit.
We're not going to let that happen because we're going to add them. And just to be clear, this whole climate, this green versus fossil debate, I'm fine with people having a point of view if that's what they think. But the problem is they're not letting the other side air their views about what the realities are behind the green agenda. And you know, it goes deeper than just energy. It goes into Western way of life. And you look at the kind of things that Klaus Schwab and the Davos crowd are putting out in their position papers and speeches. They really want this global reset to reduce us to a much smaller economy with much fewer goods and services, driving half as much as we do, getting rid of cars altogether. And not as many
of us as there are today, it turns out, is also, it seems, part of the agenda, depopulating us and, you know, having less stuff to go around. Yes, but less of us to have it go around, too.
It's bleak. It's dystopian. And we've got to do everything in our power to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it starts with, you know, our own government getting this right. And at the moment, it's, I think, frankly, part of the problem in a big way, don't you?
I think they're part of the, I think people say they're incompetent. You think about what Jennifer Granholm is doing at Energy. She's not incompetent. She doesn't believe that we should be using fossil fuels. And she's doing everything in her power to make sure that that agenda comes about.
Janet Yellen at the Treasury Department is now all in on this as well. I mean, look, it's coming down from, I think, the White House. It's not a surprise that these cabinet officers are doing.
Janet Yellen looks like this sweet little old lady, but her agenda is absolutely anything but.
It is absolutely anything but. This is a topic to which we will return to you next week. Bill Walton, thank you for your time today.
Thank you
for the great work you do at the Bill Walton Show. I really commend it to everyone. And we'll look forward to our next visit, Bill. Thank you. Next up, we're going to be speaking about deception and disinformation with an expert on the subject, retired Colonel David Guillamona, right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to a first-time guest. His name is Colonel David Guillamona. He is a retired United States Army officer who is also a chaplain by training. He served in his last duty station as the man in charge of overseeing all of the chaplains, some 1,000 of them in the United States Army, as well as some 75 installations around the world in which they operate. He is the co-author with Todd Anderson of a really important new book, The Military Guide to Disarming Deception, Battlefield Tactics to Expose the Enemy's Lies and Triumph in Truth. We're very pleased to have him with us to discuss both his insights from 30-odd years in the Army, in which he contended with, among other things, these sorts of battlefield challenges, and also life lessons that he is helping the rest of us understand about deception, disinformation, lies, and the like. Colonel, it's great to have you here at Securing America. Thank you for joining us, sir.
And Frank, it's great to be with you. And I think we're going to have a great show today.
I'm hoping so. We talked with Todd about the book, and we'll talk a bit more with you about it as well, of course. But before we did, I wanted just to do a bit of a deep dive into the problem as you see it. And it's, of course, not unique to the battlefield. It's evident in our society writ large, and really every institution, whether it's the media, whether it's business, whether it's our culture, Hollywood, whether it's, well, our government itself. We are confronting a pattern of lies and deception and disinformation that seem to be designed to obscure some of the fundamental, well, transformations that are now underway in our country. Would you agree? And if so, talk a little bit about those manifestations and what you think they are designed to do.
Well, I absolutely agree. I think we are at war, Frank, and not people, when they say think of war, they think of physical war, but there are multiple levels of this conflict that we're in, including spiritual as well, probably the root of it. You know, the Supreme Court has the Ten Commandments on its walls for a reason. That was our anchor, our mooring for many, many years. We have gone way away from that. And the farther away we get from our moorings, the worse the deception has become. Mm-hmm. So we have people in high places that are corrupt, that are disingenuous. They are doing things to dissolve the union. You know, one has to wonder why some people want to defund the police, for example. Of course, the Democrats now are saying they don't want to do that. But the fact of the matter is, defunding the police causes anarchy. If you look at the history of socialism, communism, fascism, all the isms of the world, you'll see that they divided and conquered. And that's what our enemies are trying to do. And those enemies include deep state operatives throughout the D.C., the Beltway, in the Pentagon and elsewhere. They include the New World Order, World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, most of our presidents, you know, the Council of Foreign Relations, on and on it goes, because it's all converging right now at the same time. And I think that's part of the reason, or most of the reason, why right now we are really in strife and conflict with so many things that are against our Constitution, against our Declaration of Independence, against our way of life, and in the church as well.
Yeah, you mentioned in the book, in addition to sort of media disinformation, both traditional and social media, government psychological operations and mind control techniques. And I think, you know, these are powerful instruments of, well, as you say, among other things, spiritual warfare. Which brings me to a particular concern I think we both have, which is what has been happening inside the church as well in this regard, and how this is contributing. Well, it's part of an agenda to take down the country, but how it's contributing to it. You mentioned the, you know, the Ten Commandments. I think it was the Supreme Court that played a leading role in essentially removing religion from the schools and from our society and culture more generally. Talk about how this is wreaking havoc inside the church itself and what that means in terms of this larger societal impact.
Well, you know, I have a biblical worldview. And from a biblical worldview, I think the church is very responsible for what's going on today. Mm-hmm. They didn't stand their ground. They didn't stand with the, you know, the gospel. They've been preaching socialism. They have been embracing the cancel culture. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, for what reason? And we can go into that as well. But the fact of the matter is, most of the church is disintegrating from within. And they're not held to original moorings, as I referred to, the Ten Commandments, the Judeo-Christian ethic. All the things that, you know, brought us to greatness in this country are now disintegrating. Many pastors who I have interviewed and I know personally are afraid that they speak the truth because of their congregation. People will leave. They don't want to upset the apple cart. They want to get paid, you know, professional clergy, and on it goes. But they have embraced the cancel culture, much like the church embraced Adolf Hitler when he rose to power, much like the church embraced communism under Stalin, especially in Romania. Ask Richard Wurmbrand, tortured for Christ for 14 years. So it's happening again. History is repeating itself in so many ways we don't have time in this show to go through, but we're on the brink of some major things going on our planet.
Well, you mentioned Hitler, you mentioned the Soviets. Marxism, the radical left, and, you know, contrary to a lot of nonsense, Hitler and Mussolini were of the left, not of the right. But when you look at these patterns, the attack on religion, the attack on history, the attack on, you know, sort of the social moorings, as you call them, of our constitutional republic is no accident. And it is, it seems, right out of the playbook of these totalitarians. I think you've mentioned as well, you know, the World Economic Forum, the globalists that are now pulling alongside of them. To the extent that that's what we're up against, talk, if you would, Colonel, about the kinds of tools and techniques that you're promoting in your book, The Military Guide to Disarming Deception, for countering all that.
Well, at the end of every chapter of this book, we give some guidelines. And one of the things I tell people very upfront is do an AAR of your life and yourself and history. AAR means after action review in the military, as you know, after every exercise, every combat mission, you know, we get together. What did we do right? What did we do wrong? And what do we need to improve? Mm-hmm. And I'm asking people to do the same thing in their own lives. You know, we have been steeped in progressive liberalism. If you've grown up in progressive education, public education, since the 1920s under Dewey, you know, he came in with a Marxist socialist agenda. Our kids have been taught this for a long time, and now we're reaping what we have sown for decades. You know, it doesn't come overnight, as you know. And so I'm telling people, look, we've all been steeped in this. What can we do? Well, the Bible is a foundation that doesn't change. You know, what does it actually say? Let's get back to our basic roots and get back to understanding. So get around people you trust, shows like this and others that are speaking the truth in love. Those are the kinds of things that we need to do. And, you know, don't believe in almost anything you see right now, especially social media, the mainstream media, very corrupt. Lot of instigators in there, their progressive liberal agenda, our corporations, Disneyland, you know, you name it, Disney, and on it goes. So there are very few institutions you can trust right now.
Yeah.
So we need to be about that.
Well, let me ask you about one in particular that you've spent a lot of your life serving in and trying to protect, and that is in addition to the country, of course, which our military is all about. Theoretically, the chaplain corps, I've seen a lot of reporting in recent years about the kind of assault it's been under and the perceived need of a lot of clerics in uniform, as with the church outside of the military, to conform, to go along, to remove from their work the Bible, or in some cases literally and certainly biblical teachings. How serious a problem does that represent at the moment as you see it, and what sorts of techniques are needed there as well?
Well, I have a great love for the chaplain corps, especially the Army. I understand in the other sister services, Air Force, Navy, there's a lot of political turmoil, and there is in the Army as well. But after 32 years, when you're in combat, Frank, and you're out there in the hinterlands, you as a chaplain can do pretty much anything that God has given you the task to do to help your soldiers. Mm-hmm. When you get back into the peacetime Army and you get back in installations and the Pentagon and all that, you get closer to the flagpole. That's when it becomes very difficult. You got to toe the line. And it really has to do with the commander-in-chief. What the commander-in-chief says and does, you know, goes all the way to the SecDef, SecArmy, as you know, mm-hmm. all the way down to the officers. So, you know, everybody's got to toe that political line of wokeism, and it's hurting us. In fact, I just read a story this morning that our military is disintegrating from within. Mm-hmm. Lack of leadership, lack of focus, lack of warfighting skills. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a very interesting thing if we go to war with China or Russia, which
interesting is the most benign and optimistic way I can consider that to be put. Mm-hmm. Colonel, thank you for what you are doing to try to raise an alarm about all of this and the prescriptions that you're offering to try to make a difference in the trajectory of, well, our country as well as our military. Please, everybody, check out The Military Guide to Disarming Deception. Come back to us, Colonel, if you would, in the near future. Next up, we'll talk with Bill Marshall, Judicial Watch, about, among other things, critical race theory, right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The late, great New York Times columnist and pundit William Safire once observed correctly that Hillary Clinton is a congenital liar. Turns out, Joe Biden is similarly afflicted. A notorious plagiarist, Biden has been reflexively untruthful about virtually everything, including his determination to unite America, the state of our economy, MAGA Republicans being enemies of the state, and his insistence that the Chinese communists are not bad folks. While Joe Biden and his friends frequently accuse others of engaging in the big lie, the practice of dissembling so colossally and repeatedly that people believe it, his own serial dissembling qualifies him as the big liar. The latest example came on Sunday's 60 Minutes, during which President Biden declared, quote, "There's not a single thing that I've observed at all that would affect me or the United States relative to my son Hunter," unquote. Honestly? This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest. His name is Bill Marshall. He is a longtime and very accomplished intelligence analyst and investigator for the United States government and also in various private capacities, now the chief investigator for an incalculably important organization, Judicial Watch. Bill is on the case on a whole number of issues, and we're going to be talking with him about several that he has been personally and corporately engaged in that have great importance, I believe, to, well, the future of freedom in our country, among other places. Bill Marshall, it's good to have you back. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be back.
Let's start with something that I think you have been doing, incredibly important work on, and that is exposing and really helping the rest of us understand the dangers associated with critical race theory, as it's called, CRT. There are a lot of other euphemisms for it, but describe what it is, first of all, and then let's talk a little bit about its manifestations in our country in ways that are really very, very troubling indeed.
Right. Well, critical race theory is a Marxist sort of offshoot of critical theory, and this sort of came from academia, and Barack Obama was a
Marxist
big,
academics. I think it's fair to say.
Yes, indeed, and Barack Obama was a big sort of proponent of this theory, and essentially it posits that there are the oppressed, and that everyone is oppressed except for white heterosexual males. Everyone else in society is a member of a victim group. And there's this concept called intersectionality.
Being oppressed by those white people, but particularly heterosexual males, as you say.
Yes. And it holds that the very system, the American society is constituted in such a way that all the systems, all of the institutions in American culture are systemically racist. They are designed to oppress these various groups. Now, intersectionality, which is a big component of this critical race theory, is that holds that that you're a victim of multiple vectors of oppression. You might be black and lesbian and there's a multitude of these groups, but you can fit into several oppressed groups simultaneously. But the point is that you're a victim. This is the whole notion behind CRT, and it is such a noxious and destructive ideology to any society. Yeah. No society can stand this.
Well, let me, before we go into how it's manifesting itself, Bill, just a further drill down on this. This is really, as you say, Marxist, and it's Maoist in a way. It's using, instead of class warfare, race warfare to fracture and take down our country. I think there's no getting around that. And that's all the more troubling to the extent that you see how it has been, well, normalized and enabled to permeate everything from government to schools to businesses, now to the military. Give us a flavor of what your research at Judicial Watch is exposing in those regards.
Well, when I first encountered this theory a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, I thought it was so ludicrous on its face that everyone, any sentient American would kind of dismiss it out of hand. This it brings into the, microaggressions are a big factor in this theory. And I have been getting records out of, and my colleagues as well, out of many agencies and institutions in the United States. I've been focused largely on school systems, and it's being indoctrinated among students across the country in, unfortunately, both public and private schools. I think public schools are far more infected with this stuff than private schools, but it's
and, then, and this is at the lower grade levels too. It's not just in universities, right?
Oh, this goes all the way down to the kindergarten. I mean, you have books by guys like Ibram X. Kendi, who wrote Anti-Racist Baby, I think it's called, and it's being pushed for for infants to like 4-year-olds. This is a book which talks about, how we're all different, and we're different colors. And that's very important that we should all focus on the differences in color and, pigmentation and rather than, us being a society that is a great melting pot. And, the great adage, the coined by Martin Luther King, that one should be, it is the content of one's character that matters, not the color of one's skin. This turns it on its head, because this is the basis of critical race theory, that you look at first at someone's color and you judge them based on that.
Bill, I know you've had an association with one of the military service academies, West Point. Talk a little bit about the extent to which this is manifesting itself in the service schools, as well as the United States military more generally, and whether that gives rise to real concerns for national security.
Sure. We got records out of West Point, actually two sets of records totaling about 600 pages that are really stunning. I have family members who are in the military. My son's West Point grad, and when I saw this stuff, in black and white in PowerPoint presentations, I was shocked. Just at the really odious nature of it. They talk about whiteness in one of the PowerPoints, and that race there's one slide called "Race and the Invisible Hand," in which white networks exclude black men from blue collar jobs. I mean, this is what they're telling cadets, right? The future leaders of our army. They're poisoning them with this kind of thinking. The Naval Academy is the same thing. They had put out a video with similar ideology being passed along to their own young academy
members. Future leaders, right?
Yeah, yes.
And promoting, among other things, this craziness about pronouns and not misgendering anybody. I mean, it's hard to get your head around how this works,
right,
in a combat situation, or even one in which you're supposed to be preparing for combat. The readiness of our military has got to be degraded by these kinds of fractures within our system. Bill, we have to come right back with more. We'll be right back with Bill Marshall right after this.
Welcome back.
We're visiting with Bill Marshall, the chief investigator for the truly indispensable Judicial Watch here in Washington, D.C. Bill, I wanted to switch gears a little bit. We were talking about threats to the national security, and one of the things that I have found to be deeply distressing is the evidence from Hunter Biden's laptop that Hunter and his dad have been deeply compromised, not by run-of-the-mill Chinese businessmen, that would be problematic enough, but people they knew to be top officials of Chinese intelligence, no less. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars and more have changed hands. And, you know, you have a background in national security and in intelligence matters. Talk to me about the implications for, well, obviously the highest levels of our government, but for what it says to everybody else in the food chain, anybody who's got a security clearance, that this kind of conduct is acceptable.
It is stunning beyond words, really. I mean, it's almost too difficult to get one's mind around that the FBI had all this information back, you know, going back to 2019 already, long before, you know, the election. And you had this guy, Brian Auten, who was a supervisory intelligence analyst, who was a central figure in burying the laptop, the Hunter Biden laptop. And he also figured into, you know, Russiagate heavily. He's an FBI supervisor intelligence analyst who is a key figure in so many of these in so much of the weaponization of the FBI. I mean, there were many characters involved, obviously, in that, but he was a central figure. Miranda Devine has written this brilliant book, you know, Laptop from Hell, about the Hunter laptop, and it is remarkable that the level of compromise that our own president is clearly, you know, factors in, and him and his son, obviously, both. And, you know, of course, we had all of this. Tony Bobulinski came out very early on and said that he was in meetings with Joe Biden. And clearly, you know, these deals were discussed with Joe Biden, who was the big guy.
A guy who was in business with Hunter. I mean, he had a ringside seat on all of this. And his testimony, among others, Tucker Carlson promoted it. It was just unconscionable that the FBI wasn't all over this.
Absolutely. And how anybody working in the national security space right now for the U.S. government holds a clearance, sworn oath to the Constitution, can just accept this, or is expected to just accept this as a normal part of business, that now American politics is as corrupt as any banana republic that we've ever, you know, mocked or denigrated. You know, we're at a level of you know, depravity maybe, or degradation of our politics, that I don't think my, you know, late father, you know, veteran, World War II veteran father would ever have imagined, or the millions who fought for this country.
Well, and going back to what you just said, my concern is not so much that people in the system with clearances and so on would be horrified by this. I would expect them to be, but that they would think themselves now free to conduct themselves similarly, and what that means for, you know, our entire national security apparatus. It's frightening in the extreme, and don't think that the Chinese and others, for that matter, aren't watching this very closely and figuring out how to exploit it fully. Bill, let me switch gears one more time quickly before we lose you. The Judicial Watch team has been very focused, and I think you personally as well, on this COVID scandal, really. How this pandemic was responded to, who brought it to us, the response that we couldn't use very effective, economical means of trying to provide early treatment. We had to go with these exotic and expensive big pharma products, vaccines, so-called vaccines. This seems to be coming apart at the seams at the moment, this whole you know, saga, the official narrative. Do you agree? And if so, what are the implications of that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I believe it was Denmark that just within the last week or two has essentially prohibited the vaccine from going into anyone under the age of 50, unless they say unless they're severely immunocompromised or something. It's not just that they're not recommending it. It's that they are essentially prohibiting its use. So this is, and now you have the UK.
A reverse mandate, in other
words. Yeah, exactly. And now, and then you have the UK saying, okay, we're not going to give this to anybody anymore under the age of 11. Well, that begs the question, well, why? What have you suddenly discovered? Now, you and I know, you know, what's out there. And anybody who has an iota of curiosity and self-preservation should be searching the alternative or the new media, if you prefer, not going to the corporate legacy media because they're all bought and paid for by Big Pharma, but go to Children's Health Defense, or Robert F. Kennedy's excellent organization. Go to World Council for Health, another very good site. You know, I watched
and a whole slew of medical doctors, many of whom you've been
many of whom I know personally and are assisting me in my own research. Yes, absolutely. There are great organizations that are doing yeoman's work out there.
Frontline doctors and, you know, yes, the great Barrington Declaration team and so on. And so, Bill, if what we have had perpetrated here has been a fraud, basically, Pfizer in particular seems to have known there were serious problems with its vaccine. The FDA and CDC have been seemingly covering up for Big Pharma in that regard, among others. And so much of what we've been told is simply not true. It really seems as though now the whole public health sector, in whom we've been, you know, reposing considerable confidence, is no longer trustworthy. And the government of the United States that has enforced its directions on us isn't either. It's a topic to which we will return with you, Bill. Thank you. We're out of time for today, but I so appreciate the work you do and that of your colleagues at Judicial Watch. I encourage everyone to check it out. I hope that the rest of you have found this program to be useful and better equipped as a result to help us in protecting the country we love. If so, go forth and multiply. See you next time.